Toscano, Sego Sigoli, Ani, and welcome to Compelling Conversations. I'm your host, David Moses. It's a pleasure to have you listening to the show with us, and it is a pleasure to have Matt Jamieson returning to the show, the president and CEO of the Six Nations of the Grand River Development Corporation. And Matt has been kind enough to join us today to talk about the new development corporation governance structure that has now been announced and set up with the Six Nations Elected Council. So Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks, David. We're happy to be here. Always happy to come on the radio and talk about some of the interesting and innovative things that the Six Nations Dev Corp's involved in.
Yeah, and you know, I guess the first thing I'd like to ask you about is looking back at the history of this. I mean, the Development Corporation has been around since, I think, 2015?
Correct. Yeah,
and so the governance model that was set up, it had three committees or boards. It had the advisory committee, then had board of the directors, and then it had the trustees. And I know that's one of the changes. But I'm guessing that since the corporation has developed, certain things may have cropped up. And what makes me think of that is one of the things that you're changing is around some of the properties. And I'm guessing that there must have been some things that came up that maybe weren't to the advantage of the model that was set up at that time.
Yeah, that's correct, David. But you know, first of all, I think that you know, when you're in a company that's got some level of maturity under it, like DevCorp is now, we were 7 years in. It's always good to, you know, hit pause and have a look and reflect on, you know, what's working well and some of the things that aren't.
Right.
Really, that's what led to us as a company, as a management team, and a board to sort of, you know, look back on the things that have really, really been successful and some of the things that we've struggled on. And, we've ultimately arrived at, you know, this new model, which I think is going to accelerate us into a future that's even brighter than what it is today. But part of that is, you know, under the original DevCorp model, the DevCorp took all of the assets that were previously managed under the economic development department, irrespective of whether or not they had viability from a business perspective.
Right.
And you know, as we've progressed as a company, we've been able to accelerate certain things, and in other cases, they've been stale. We've been unable to move the needle, largely because you know, some of the properties, and specifically, are a challenge from a political perspective. Mm. For example, 431 West Street in Brantford. Yes, it's Six Nations land. It was managed by the DevCorp, but ultimately, there's some work to be done there politically between the council and the city to figure out what exactly can be built there, what the parties are going to support, and then how we can, as a community, can invest in that property. There may be a role for the DevCorp to play in the future, but it just didn't make sense for us to be the group that's holding the property when we don't really have the ability to advance its future.
All right. So having said that, and you mentioned the maturity of the DevCorp now with 7 years under the belt, when did the talks or the idea of the restructuring start? What was part of the history of that?
Yeah, you know, actually, it started in February of 2022, and it was really about, listen, there's things that are and aren't working, right? Mm. And you know, we have a fairly new council, and you know, we had lots of interactions with them, and we had heard some feedback that, you know what, there was some frustration with the accessibility of some of the trust funds, and there was also communication gaps within the Development Corporation itself. As you mentioned, we had the advisory committee, the Economic Development Trust Board, and the Board of Directors, and all of whom carried out a very specific function. Mm. But there wasn't a lot of interface or an interaction between those groups, and so it did allow things to slip between the gaps.
Right.
And you know, things that were happening at the board level, sometimes the trustees had no idea. And you know, the communication gap, I think, didn't help us in, you know, sharing a positive message with the community. And we believe now, with this new consolidated model, the more folks at the table, the more knowledge that there is in the things that we do, will lead to better outcomes in the future and a better open communication, not just with their shareholder, the council, but with the community at large.
All right. So I imagine that as you start to open up this conversation with the council and with yourselves, you probably said, you know what, if we're doing this, let's look at a few other things as well. Perhaps the new funding agreement that you've worked out with council as well. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's really three pillars of DevCorp 2.0. One of them is this 15-year funding agreement. The other one was the divestiture of properties, which we just sort of talked about briefly. And then the last one was the amalgamated governance model. So on the funding agreement, really what the funding agreement is, it's solidifying an allocation that goes to the elected council every year in an amount not less than $1.4 million. And it could be much higher than that because they can also participate up to 40% of our consolidated net free cash flow. So, I mean, I'm hopeful that number is going to be much higher than 1.4 million. Mm. But in its base case, we're comfortable that we can continue to make those contributions. And what that, I mean, the reason why we did that is because, you know, the elected council is the agency in the community that provides for the healthcare, the education, the roads, the buildings. And if you go back and reverse engineer the amount of money, the funds that the council or council departments have gotten through the trust over the last 7 years, it does work out to be about 40% of the surplus cash flow that the Def Corp was generating. Mm. So what this does is it sort of clears up a lot of the red tape. It allows for transfers to be made. It allows for council to do long-term planning on revenue streams that are bankable. And frankly, it gives those council department heads, the directors there, an opportunity to focus on their business plans as opposed to filling out applications for a trust application for things that we all know are important, like water and wastewater and homes, right? I think it's about efficiency, and it's about giving some credibility and some bankability to the council that they can go out and make long-term decisions, knowing full well that for the next 15 years, they have this stable cash flow that they can rely on.
And how did the conversations flow between you and council on this? Were they always joint conversations? Did you guys take away things and talk about them, come back, and then sort of share these ideas and talk about how it might move forward?
You know, it was a very, very much a collaborative effort. I think that, you know, I think both sides really realized that, you know what, heck, we can be doing a lot better. And we have done some great things at Def Corp. We built, you know, a great portfolio of assets, and we've moved the needle from an environmental perspective. But there's always opportunity for improvement. And I think that our shareholder, the council, and our board of directors and advisory committee, we all realized that, you know what, we can do so much better because, you know what, we're in this together. And mm-hmm. So the way I would characterize this, David, is that, you know, there was elements of frustration in the past, I know, but I think that it was a meeting of the minds and ultimately led to a collaborative effort. And you know what, we've worked very closely with the council and their representatives over the last almost year. And I can say, without a doubt, we have right now the best relationship we've ever had with an elected council in the community.
That's great. That's good to hear. Congratulations on that. And also congratulations, Matt, on the most recent, I guess, announcement that, you know, the Def Corp was part of, and I guess council as well, with the battery storage facility that's being set up. And that's wonderful.
Well, you know, that's a really exciting and innovative project. Mm-hmm. You know, that we are actually initiating a communications campaign for the community because we did go through a fairly extensive round of community consultation back in 2021. It's just taken a long time to get the project to where it is. And so there will be, you have to watch some of our media announcements coming out. But, you know, in a nutshell, the battery project is the first of its kind in Canada at the scale that it is.
Yeah.
It's a lithium storage facility, not located in Six Nations, but mm-hmm. located down near the Jarvis area.
Yep.
You know, what the asset, what the battery really does, it makes better use of the things that we already have so that we don't have to go and build new gas plants or other types of electrical generating systems. We already have renewable energy assets in the market. It's just that they don't operate efficiently because the electrical grid wasn't designed for those types of systems.
Right.
Now with the battery project, we are partnered with some great companies. Tesla is the battery vendor. And you know, we're looking forward to really unlocking the value of renewable energy in the grid. And that's going to move the needle in terms of greenhouse gas reductions, as well as save the ratepayer, including our community members, money. Mm. Mm. By maximizing the value of the things that we already have.
Right. Oh, Tesla's involved. I didn't know that. Gee, maybe there's a way for to get a deal on some cars for the community.
I could only wish.
Yeah. Great. Well, congratulations, as I said, on that as well. I want to come back to the setup and the governance model, because we talked about the amalgamation of the three boards that were there, the advisory, the treasurer, and the board of directors. So that has now been taken out of, I guess, 15, there was 15 people, and it's down to 9 now?
Yeah.
How is that going to move forward? They were set up on a 2 and 3 year sort of plan, because you don't want everybody exiting at the same time if they're, you know, and how is that going to operate?
Yeah, no, staggered terms are really critically important for that knowledge retention in the organization. Mm. You know, before I jump into this, David, I just want to say I'm so grateful and appreciative for the community members that have stood up and participated in these board roles over the last number of years, yourself included. And you know, it's there's a lot of very talented folks in the community, and some of the things that we do are complex, and it takes time and effort and diligence and focus to play a role at a leadership level. And so I'm very grateful that we've had a really strong legacy of great board and governance leaders. But you know, at the same time, we also know that finding 15 members, five for the board, five for the advisory committee, and five for the trust, is a challenge, because it's a lot of work.
It is, yeah.
Well, there were times when there were vacancies, and you know, we were putting a lot of pressure on the members that were here to make decisions for not having the full amount of bodies around the table you'd like. And so, you know what, we stopped and paused and reflected. And when I touched on it earlier, it's about the communication piece was, how do we close the gap of communication? And as we close the gap of communication, how can we bring the group tighter? And it just made a lot of sense to amalgamate all three of those board functions together and then lower the number of members down to 9 so that we can really get, you know, into the weeds on some of these things. We're going to rely a lot more on committee meetings to help, you know, move the company forward. We will have our normal quarterly board meetings, but the committee structure really will become, you know, sort of the nucleus of how business takes place in the development corporation. I know we have already launched this on a staggered term. So our 9 members, you know, they all have a different term. So we know that we're going to have that knowledge retention as they exit and new members come in. I mean, I'm really excited. There's a lot of work to do. And, you know, we're planning this morning the orientation of our new members so that they fully understand the roles of the board and how we make decisions and how we manage risk and assess investment opportunities. So I'm excited. We got some great people at the table who've already proven themselves talented. The 9 members that we do have in the board were part of the 15 member that we had previously. Some of them stepped back for personal reasons or otherwise. But the 9 that we do have are all very talented, very committed, and I'm really excited to work with them.
Right. And how is it going to now work in terms of applications for people that want to apply for funding? I think I saw something about how this board is going to break off into committees or something like that.
Yeah, as part of the governance structure under this 2.0 model, we will have an economic development trust committee. So the committee will be made up of board members, 3 to 5 board members who will essentially carry out the previous functions of the economic development trust. They'll just do it as a committee activity. So 10% of our surplus free cash flow per year will be allocated for that trust process. And so that'll be more targeting the grassroots applicants that we've serviced in the past through the trust. And so I know that the new trustees will have to spend some time on whether or not they're going to re-engineer some of that, the trust process itself. That's sort of outside of my wheelhouse. I don't really get involved in how the trust utilizes those funds. But I do know that they are going to take a look at how they assess applications and how they allocate resources and funding.
Right.
But I mean, the good news is the model, I think that, you know, the new funding model that we've arrived at allows for many things. It allows for, you know, the shareholder, the council to get, you know, a guaranteed revenue flow every year. It allows the trustees to touch the community through 10% allocation every year. And it provides the development corporation with certainty that we have funds to reinvest and grow.
Mm.
Now, we need to have, you know, over the next 10, 15 years, we need to know with a level of certainty that, you know, we too have cash flow requirements. We too need to grow and build and invest. And I think this new funding model really solidifies that in a way that we were lacking in the past.
Now, speaking of that, the other thing is that council no longer, as they were in the past, they don't have to apply for applications as well. They're just going to have that amount that you set that's going to set aside for them and possibly more if there is the funds available.
Yeah, that's correct. So the 1.4 minimum or 40% of whatever that free cash flow calculation is really is a direct transfer to the council. And, you know, part of that is by design. You know, it allows them to rely on that funding flow to make long-term decisions, plan for capital, plan for what water lines and stuff they're going to put in. Without that certainty, they're not able to plan as clearly as they could. And, you know, if it's greater than the 1.4 or as high as 40% of our free cash flow, they will get that allocation. And we know that they'll do things that are in line with the community plan, partly because the funding agreement is a requirement is that the council report back to the trustees on the use of funds and are held accountable to make sure that they're transparent and that they are in line with the long-term needs of our community. So it's not like we're writing a blank check to the council. It's a contribution that goes to the council with reporting obligations that will be reported to the community every year. You'll see where dollar for dollar went and how it was spent.
Right. Matt, looking to the future to some degree, you say you're hoping to be autonomous by the year 2030. Autonomous meaning for what? The community? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, you know, the word autonomous has been somewhat misunderstood. It is the pursuit of economic prosperity.
Okay.
Fund generating enough wealth and income in our community that would allow us and our future leaders to make independent decisions outside of the influence from any foreign government. To me, is autonomy.
Right.
And the year 2030 is the goal that we had set to generate an annual direct economic impact of $150 million.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we're absolutely committed to do that. Will it mean in 2030 that we're absolutely autonomous? No. I think that, you know, the future is going to be determined by the youth that are coming up, the future leaders. But if we can do our part, generate an economic impact and cash flow to empower them to act independently in the interests of our nation, that is what we should be doing for our community.
Mm.
And if the future generations and the future leaders decide to take that to another level, then great.
Yeah.
But let's equip them with the ammunition to make those decisions, which we don't have today.
Right. Nicely said. Now, speaking again of the future and looking that in that direction, I'm sure you have a few things on the go. Is there anything that you can hint at or share with us about what's going on and what's coming down the pipe?
Well, you know, in Ontario, there's a renewed push for more renewable energy projects. Mm. You know, to me, that's a great thing.
Yep.
These are things that we've already participated in: large wind, large solar, now battery storage. I welcome that type of opportunity. But, you know, in the same breath, the DevCorp 2.0 is leading us down a path of diversification. We're looking at opportunities where opportunities present themselves. And so we are looking at, you know, higher density residential. We are looking at developing and building tiny homes out of the United Business Park right now. In fact, we will have a model ready in the next couple of months that we are going to showcase to the community. We're diversifying our focus, but we're looking for ways to be innovative that we can maximize our economic returns, but also touch the community in new and interesting ways. We're going to continue to invest in Chiefswood Park and the tourism offerings that we have there. Of course, the gathering place and bingo hall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the effects of COVID, we're still reeling a bit from COVID and the bingo hall because of our aging customer base, but
sure.
Constantly innovating and looking at ways in which we can move the needle forward and continue to advance along the lines of, you know, the things that are important that fit our values.
Mm. Speaking of tourism, you know, and at Chiefswood Park, certainly all the those cabins, the glamping, it's been referred to as to some degree, they look great. How is that doing in terms of getting people to come and participate and enjoy themselves there?
Yeah, you know, I think unfortunately, we when we opened the cabins, that's right when COVID hit.
So
we didn't get off to a great start. But I can tell you, I was just over there this morning, and we're working hard to get ready for this for the summer season. The park itself is beautiful, and you know, we're going to continue to invest to make that the park the showcase of our community. And I hear from many people who come here that are just blown away by the cabins and, you know, the beauty of the river and all the things that it offers. So we're going to continue to invest. We are seeing a big uptick in rentals of our cabins.
Right.
And over the summer, we're looking at going to a week-long rental as opposed to a nightly rental. There's a couple of reasons why we can do that. Well, because we can do that because it's a great product and people want to come for that long. And while they're here, they can experience other things.
Right.
But secondly, it's also, you know, an economic decision that, you know, if somebody's there for a week, we don't necessarily have to clean the room or flip the room every day,
sure.
Which lowers our costs and maximizes profit. At the end of the day, you know, we are a profit-motivated company. We need to generate that free cash flow so that we can make those transfers to the trust,
right,
to the council, and we can make those reinvestments into the future so we can reach that autonomy.
Yeah, speaking of reinvestments, I see that one of the changes that happened at the tourism building is you've got this really nice, big, beautiful sign there that's up, and what a great, perfect spot for it, actually.
Yeah, you know, it's something that we've been working on for some time. Again, COVID and its impact on, you know, computer chips and everything else, an 18-month delay in having that sign up. But I'm very excited. In fact, community members, there's a phone number, and I can't tell you what it is because I don't know it. There's a number on the sign where people can advertise their businesses, and we've had some significant uptake because it is a great location.
It is.
And you know, we also have new signs on the gathering place and in front of Chiefs Park. So we're trying to be, you know, we're not trying to be Las Vegas, but we're trying to grab people's attention to get them to slow down and stop and spend some time.
Yeah, yeah. Matt, is there anything else that comes to mind that we haven't touched on that you think is important or want to share just before we go our separate ways?
No, and I just think that, you know what, I appreciate all the time and effort our board and council and community members have put forth when it comes to the Dev Corp. It's a big company. We're doing lots of different things. And I appreciate the time that people take to do their research, to you know, poke around and ask questions. That's a great thing. Mm-hmm. And if anybody does have questions about any of the projects we've been involved with, please go to snfuture.ca. It's a website that was built so that the community could have access to data, a data repository of all the things that we've done. And so with respect to the United Energy Storage, the battery project, there's a whole page of material there that I would encourage all listeners to go on and poke around and ask some questions. Mm. And you know what? Just because we've gone through the community consultation process already doesn't mean it's over. Mm. We're always ready to listen and talk and engage around what this project means for our community moving forward.
Sounds good, Matt. Yanwa, for taking the time to join me on the show. Really appreciate your time and also all the information you share about this. Best of luck with DevCorp in the future. We look forward to wonderful and great things and prosperous things from you guys and how you can benefit the community in the future. So much appreciated.
Great. Thank you, David. Ona.
Ona, take care. That, of course, is Matt Jamieson. He is the president and CEO of the Six Nations of the Grand River Development Corporation, and he was kind enough to take time to join us on the show to talk about the new Development Corporation governance structure that they have set up with the Six Nations Elected Council and ultimately with the community. It's been a pleasure to have him on the show, and it's always a pleasure to have you listening to the show right here on CKRZ 100.3 FM. Until next time, I say Ona and Bumapi.